So you've heard of the Challenger Sale, our best-selling book that gives B2B sellers a competitive advantage. Maybe you've even read it a few times. Or maybe you're a sales leader who purchased a copy of the book for everyone on your team and asked them to read it and adopt its principles. And of course, you have this podcast to help you and your team take your Challenger skills to the next level. But are books and podcasts really enough to help you create meaningful, lasting improvement in your sales performance? Probably not. The good news is there's a company that helps you do just that. Challenger Inc. has a decade of experience helping organizations implement the Challenger approach through training, coaching, consulting, and technology. We've helped hundreds of B2B sales organizations of all shapes and sizes around the globe improve top-line growth by winning more deals. Check us out at www.challengerinc.com today to learn more about how to get started on your Challenger transformation. Welcome to Winning the Challenger Sale, a podcast where we take you beyond the groundbreaking book that transformed the world of sales and share practical advice on how to show up like a challenger in your customer conversations. I'm your host, Jen Allen. Our goal here is simple: equip you and your teams to win more deals by harnessing your inner challenger. This is part of Challenger Inc.'s suite of products designed to give you everything you need to go from idea to action to meeting and exceeding your sales goals. Now let's get started. Welcome back to this week's episode of Winning the Challenger Sale. I'm your host, Jen Allen, and we're wrapping up our June theme of persuasive storytelling. Now, for the last 4 weeks, we've heard tactics from Ravi Virjani, Brent Adamson, Doug Ferreira, and Nick Capozzi for how sellers can use storytelling to convey the human cost of inaction. Now, for those of you that have been following along with our podcast, you know I've spent the last 17 years as a frontline seller working for organizations that relentlessly study seller and buyer behavior. What you may not know is each year, I set a goal to identify at least one assumption I have about what it takes to do the job well, and I seek to disrupt it. In 2021, that one assumption was how I viewed the role of storytelling in my sales pursuits. So today, I'm going to be sharing some of my own lessons learned about storytelling, what I got wrong, what I learned to do differently, and I'll recap the frameworks I shared on this month's Winning the Challenger Sale webinar, which we hold the second Thursday of every month. Now, it wouldn't be right if I didn't start us off with a story, so let's get into it. Now, for those of you that follow along with me on LinkedIn, you might recall a couple weeks ago, I wrote a post on LinkedIn with the header, "Why am I celebrating the fact that my dog Muggsy peed on our kid's bath towel?" Now, you've probably heard Muggsy barking in the background. Muggsy is just my little devilish terrier rescue dog that I just cannot seem to get housebroken. But for the last year, I've been in this ritual with our kids. Kids get a towel to go to the shower. They use the towel to dry off when they're done. And then when they're done, they throw their towel on the floor in their bedroom. And every time this happens, I go in there and I talk to them around why it's so much better to hang up their towel instead of just leaving it crumpled on the floor. So I explain to them, it'll dry faster. It'll smell better. It won't get dirty so fast, right? But none of this ever helped to change their behavior. Why? Well, drying faster, they don't really care. They're totally fine with it being a little bit wet. Smelling better, they think it smells fine. And they don't care about how dirty it gets. It's not like they're doing the laundry. They're 7 years old and 9 years old, right? So basically, I was realizing that what I was doing is I'm teaching them all about why their action, changing their behavior, would make things better, but they didn't really care. Like, status quo was good enough, as we often find in sales. And so this kept happening again and again until my little dude Muggsy came in one day and he peed on a bath towel in our daughter's room. Now, this is disgusting, right? I don't think we should normally celebrate dogs peeing in the house. However, Muggsy did what I didn't. Muggsy exposed the kids to the cost of inaction. They were totally fine tolerating a little bit stinky, a little bit wet, a little bit dirty towels. But by Muggsy leaving his mark on their towel, what it taught her was, if you do this again, you are putting yourself at risk for this happening again. And that's just straight up gross, right? So Why do I tell this story? One is because it always reminds me of the parallels between sales and our human day-to-day life. I think sometimes we like learn the very best lessons is looking through our lens of our family or our friends and then relate them back to sales. But two, it's because for those of you that have been listening, you'll hear me talk about cost of inaction all the time, right? It's something, it's probably one of the best lessons I learned in just thinking differently about how we paint the picture of staying the same to existing customers and prospects and get them to realize the urgency to act. I don't think I've ever posted about cost of inaction and had more people reach out to me and say, this is it, it clicks. I'm going to use this story with my team than I had talking about Muggsy peeing on the bath towel. And I will say, to kind of back up, this is a big, big realization I had last year. I was spending a lot of my time focusing on sort of the rational case for change and why a client should do something and the benefit of action. And even when I started getting smarter about shifting to cost of inaction, I was still highly rational in how I was talking about it. And I think one of the things we've all observed from sellers that we really admire is in many cases, they're phenomenal storytellers. And stories, more than anything else, help us arm our stakeholders, our mobilizers, our advocates, whatever word we want to use for them, to go and tell our story on our behalf when we're not in the room. And so for anyone that's sort of doubting, yeah, is this, you know, worth getting better at, or what's the ROI of becoming a better storyteller? I'll share with you something that really, really surprised me that Challenger studied. So we studied a few years ago for customers that were willing to buy a solution, how many of them were actually willing to advocate for that solution back within the broader buying group? So take, for example, I do a demo with, let's say, you know, a VP of IT, but in order to buy the solution or the product, he or she has to get his or her boss to say yes. It is a completely different motion for someone to not just say, yes, I like it, but to take that next step and to say that they're willing to advocate for it. And what we found in the research was only 49% of stakeholders who want to buy what you have to sell them are actually willing to take that next step and advocate for it, right? That's a scary number. Just under half of the people that we talk to who we convince and compel to see the need for change are willing to go and do the hard work to get the rest of the buying group on board. And so what we did in the webinar a couple of weeks ago is we sort of unpacked a little bit about why that is and what we as sellers can do differently to overcome it. So I'm going to kind of take you through a Cliff Notes version. And then for anyone who wants the deeper dive, you can go to challengerinc.com and all of our Winning the Challenger Sale webinars are available for replay there. So first things first, here is how I used to tell stories, right? I would look at a customer who was interested in what we have to offer. And I would say, now I've got to compel them to see how great we are. And if they do business with us, how much better life will be on the other side. So a lot of my stories sounded like, and this is illustrative, but like, hey, here's a company who was struggling to get their reps to enter their activities in CRM. And so forecasts were inaccurate and the VP of sales was really frustrated. And then upon working with this company, the VP of sales saw a big increase in CRM adoption. And the solution from the company helped reduce the, you know, the burden of data entry on their sellers. And it resulted in a 20% increase in forecast accuracy. And the VP of sales at Acme Company felt it was the single best investment he made in 2021. I don't sell CRM, any CRM tools, but like illustrative, right? This is a story that I have told in many, many different situations, just swap in my product. Now, the problem here is the hero of the story, I just told is not the customer, right? The hero of the story is actually us. And when we consider the buying journey that our customers have to go down in order to get budget and get buy-in and get consensus to move forward with our solution, it presents a real gap here, right? Because ultimately, I'm telling a story how we swooped in and saved the day. But in reality, what I really need to do is compel that stakeholder to see, why is it worth going through the hassle of creating a business case and getting everybody on board and you know, working with procurement and working with legal and getting all the things in motion and disrupting status quo if they're not the hero. And so first big lesson I learned was I have to be mindful when I'm telling a story, who is the star of the show here, right? I would argue that in any supplier story, we should be a supporting character, but the main character of that is actually the buyer that needs to go through the motion. So that was big lesson number one for me and being more mindful about who I starred in the show. Now, second big learning that I had, and this actually came from our team spending some time last year on the subject of storytelling together, was actually segmenting out the situations in which I would use stories. So the story I just told around, you know, the supplier or the vendor being the star of the show, that is what we kind of call a solution story. Now, there's a time and a place when you make your main character your customer to tell the impact of doing something. But when I sat back and looked at all the stories I was telling, what I realized was I was telling 100% solution stories. I wasn't actually telling problem stories. So what's the difference? Problem stories, think these are the stories that don't end well, right? These are the stories that our buyers are often trying to convince themselves, it'll never happen to me. And by doing so, they allow status quo to perpetuate. And so what I realized very quickly is all of my stories were, here's what happens if you do something. Very few of them were actually illustrating the cost of inaction, falling into that problem story camp. And in problem stories, what we're doing is we're thinking about how do I show the human cost of inaction by not doing something? And what's really interesting is when I spend a lot of time with sellers and when I look at how and where sellers use storytelling, I don't think I was that abnormal, right? I think for most of us, we spend a lot of time pitching change with solution stories instead of deepening pain with problem stories. So second big learning for me here was make sure the ratio is not 80-20. The ratio should really be heavily based on problem stories. And once I've convinced and compelled that stakeholder that there's a massive problem to be solved, then I can start to shift into the solution stories. Then I've earned the right to talk about now what happens if you solve it. So that's big lesson number two. Now, third big lesson that I learned. So those of you that are clients of ours or have, you know, studied the book very well, you'll know that Challenger has a explicit choreography that we follow. And in the choreography, what we are essentially helping sellers do is think about how do I create the case for why change, why now, and why do that with us? Now, there's six steps in the choreography, as many of you know, starting off with the warmer, which is establishing credibility, then introducing a reframe, which is a different way of thinking about the business problem, then proving out the cost of inaction for rational drowning, then emotional impact being the human impact of doing nothing, the new way forward, which is simply a different way to approach the problem, and then ultimately our solution, which is when we get the right to talk about us. Now, those are the six steps. What did I do all of the time? I'd walk in, land a warmer, land a reframe, even start getting really, really pretty decent at doing the rational drowning. But as soon as I was met with the head nod from the customer when I'm making the rational cost of an action case, what would I do? I would evil Knievel right past emotional impact. Because why, right? I've already got the customer head nodding. Now I've got to introduce the new way forward and ultimately get to talk to them about us. The reality is when I do this, what I've left my buyer with is certainly a decent case for change from a rational perspective. But think about what we need that buyer to go and do. It's not like buyers are having a hallway conversation with bar charts and graphs and data points, right? Maybe some do. But largely what they have to do is they have to get broader buying group interest by telling a story. And I had a client actually a few months ago tell me, you know, when we worked with you, you guys did a phenomenal job of building out a really sound rational case for change. But the reality was I had to just walk up to my CEO and tell him a story that got him to say, well, how do we fix this? And how do we prevent that problem from happening to us? And so it really opened my eyes to the fact that while rational cases for change are absolutely essential, sometimes what we really need to support our stakeholders with is that hallway conversation. How do we tell a story that they feel comfortable telling that they can then tell to others on their behalf? So big lesson there for me in terms of making sure I'm not skipping past the emotional impact the second I see sort of agreement or interest in the rational case for change. So all that said, those are four big lessons that I learned, things that I've thought differently about and more mindful and intentional about in my sales conversations now. So second part is let's break down some of the key components to telling effective stories. So there's three things in my mind that really helped me give more structure to the way that I was telling stories. So one was being mindful about isolating the purpose of the story. Now, what does that mean in plain English? The purpose of the story should be to make your customer feel a very specific feeling, right? So maybe we want them to feel urgency. Maybe we want them to feel doubt. Maybe we want them to feel trust. I realized what I was doing is I was mishmashing all sorts of feelings together. And as a result, it probably left a lot of my buyers feeling like, cool story, not really sure what I'm supposed to do with it. And so what I learned is by isolating the purpose, meaning identifying before you even think about the story, what is the circumstance that you're in? What is the feeling you are trying to elicit from your customer? What does it look like if they feel that way? What does it sound like? And then what is it my story needs to illustrate in order to achieve that? So an example we talked about in the webinar is, let's say we're trying to create a feeling of urgency with our customers. What this could look like is, oh, my customer says they want to wait until next year to buy, and I'm trying to show them there's urgency to act. So my story, for example, could illustrate what would be the urgency in their world. Maybe it's their competition is catching up fast. Maybe it's they've released a new product and there's a lot of eyes on the success of that, right? Ultimately, by defining what is the one singular feeling I want them to feel, it gave my stories much more clarity. It gave my stories much more structure, and it helped me make sure that as I worked through the narrative, I could check the box at the end and say, does this elicit a feeling of urgency? So step one, isolate the purpose, isolate the feeling that you want your customers to feel. Now, step two is thinking about your three story elements. Now, those elements are your character, the imagery you use, and the hook that sets up your story. So character is pretty straightforward, right? Like, who are we cheering for? Who are we feeling for? Your audience, your buyer, should be able to see themselves in that main character. So make sure that when we tell a story, we are lining up our main character with that person's circumstances. I know that sounds tremendously obvious, but I have made missteps before by thinking this is a great story because there's a fabulous ending to it. And then only finding out, hey, the circumstances between the story I told and the buyer I was selling to are so far apart that that character couldn't see themselves in the story. Second element, imagery, right? This is something that all great storytellers do really well. And I think it was Doug who talked about in a previous week's episode on storytelling, how we can draw amazing inspiration from books, children's books, movies, TV shows, right? Setting the stage to, again, allow that character to see this is a story that you can star in. This is a story you could see yourself in. So allowing that person to picture the setting of the story. Now, I will say this is another place that I really screwed up a lot, because in the back of my head is always the, whatever that gong survey was or that study was that talks about ratio of talk time from seller to customer. And so what I would do is I would rush right past this. I would do almost no imagery or setting around the story I was telling, and I would just get into the action. It did not prove to be a very effective way of telling stories. And I think what I've come to realize is as long as we are telling the right character story and we're using relevant imagery, buyers will lean in and listen. We don't have to rush through it to get to the end, because then we lose the impact of the story. So another big takeaway for me. And third and finally, out of the three key story elements, is the initial hook. This is another place I just completely blew past. So the initial hook is setting up your story with a high impact question, a fact, a quote, a statistic, something that creates curiosity to learn more. So in the case of my Muggsy story, right, it was, why am I celebrating the fact that Muggsy peed on my kid's bath towel? It creates curiosity. Now, some people might say, like, that's so gross, I'm not even thinking about it. But for many people, it caused them to say, okay, let me lean in. Why would that? Because 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2 there. That's exactly what we want. We have to create a hook that from the get-go makes our buyers want to lean into the conversation because we're seeding curiosity. So those are your three story elements: character, imagery, and initial hook. Now, third and finally, when we think about the three steps to effective storytelling, is how we structure the story. And there's a framework that I like that I learned from Challenger that refers to a sort of three-part story arc. And that three-part story arc is situation, complication, and outcome. Now, situation is where the main character of your story is encountering something which leads him or her in the direction of a transformation. It is really important after we land that initial hook that it is very clear the situation we are finding our main character of the story in relates to the situation your buyer is in or is about to be in as a result of no action. Second, the complication is the tension or the conflict that is exposed. Right? In any good movie, right, there's always some complication that our hero has to maneuver through. And then third and finally is the outcome, the hero's actions that result in what. Now, when we are thinking about this three-part story arc, let's go back to what we talked about before. There are problem stories and there are solution stories. Many of us are wired to tell a story that has a happy ending, a happy outcome. But when we are telling a problem story, what we're actually showing is the cost of doing nothing. That should be a negative ending, right? So as I'm describing the situation, I'm describing the complication, the outcome is bad. When we are telling a solution story, the outcome is obviously positive. It's the result of doing something. But one thing I caught myself doing was every one of my stories ended up having a happy ending. So I was starting with a problem story and ultimately merging into a solution story. This is something that I have to be mindful about, intentional about. If I'm telling a problem story, I have to end it with a bad ending. If I'm telling a solution story, end it with a happy ending. Don't merge the two together. It gets lost. And we use problem stories earlier in the sales process to create the cost of an action, to show the pain of staying the same. So, three steps to effective storytelling. Now, last thing I'll talk about is when to use storytelling. So this, again, I kind of fell into the trap of, hey, I'm getting towards the end. They're starting to ask about, you know, ROI and measuring the value. And I'm starting to tell a lot of these solution stories. And no knock against it, right? It can be a very powerful tool as you are late stage. But what I failed to appreciate is there are a lot of circumstances prior to that in the sales process when I could have used storytelling. So I'll list out 5 that I tend to use now. And again, this is something I just started working on more, you know, intentionally last year. So total work in progress. One is stuck deal. So there is a tactic that I use quite a bit, honestly, when I find myself in a stuck deal situation. And that tactic is to contact the buyer over email and send them an email with the subject line, remember our conversation on X. X is the problem. X is not our company name or our solution. It is the problem that they initially identified with that caused them to go through the journey with me. And then in the body of the email, I will tell a story about the problem and another client that I saw going through the same problem recently, right? So it might sound like, Jim, I was reflecting on our conversation a few months ago about the problem that you were having with getting sellers to, you know, adopt the CRM. Again, I don't sell CRM, so bear with me. What I will do then after that is I will tell the story of doing nothing, right? So I was just talking to a client the other day who shared with me they were having a really similar challenge. And ultimately, it just became, this is a cost of doing business. No sellers are going to be 100% compliant on CRM. It is what it is. Now, as a result, this complication happened. As a result of the complication, here was the outcome that occurred. Right now, I think one of the important things is this can start to sound like a novel if we're not short and punchy and to the point. So just like we advised in the social selling webinars, like formatting and your spacing and all these things matter, because essentially what we're doing is we're earning the right to read the next sentence in every aspect of the story. But ultimately, what I'm trying to do when I use storytelling for this approach is to remind someone of that problem and remind someone of the human cost of doing nothing. Because it is arguably so difficult to be a buyer today. There's a million things people are managing. And it does not mean that they do not care if ours is not at the top of the plate. It just means there's more work to do for us to elevate the problem in the priority list that they're solving. So stuck deals, that's a tactic I use a lot. And usually what it elicits is the customer saying, okay, let's get back on the phone, right? And that's ultimately what I want. I don't need them to buy off of that email. I just need them to commit to reprioritizing and spending more time. Or even better outcome, not actually even better, but equally good outcome is they say, look, like we've deprioritized this. And then I know, and I'm not wasting my time and chasing it. But by putting in the effort, it shows your buyer that you really, really are attached to the problem that they have and you're mindful of it. You're thinking about it. So that's one. Two, in cold outreach, this is a place where I just think there's the biggest opportunity for sellers to shine. We often receive emails that are solution storytells, right? I don't know if you've heard of our company, but we work with companies like this, and this is how we've helped them. And it's a 15-time ROI. I've sent them, I've received them. Nobody cares, right? These are complete strangers we're contacting and we're telling them all the great stories of what we can do, and they just don't care. What I find to be more effective is problem storytelling, right? In cold outreach, resist the urge to show how you are the hero, your solution is the hero, your company is the hero, and all the upsides of doing something, and think about, how do I illuminate the cost of inaction of doing nothing? Problem storytelling. Third use case, overcoming an objection. So I actually hate the language of overcoming an objection. I love the language of seeking to understand the objection. But let's say we are presented with an objection as part of the sales process. What I think many of us are wired to do, in fact, many of us grew up learning how to do this, is to go into this like offense, defense motion where the customer has an objection and we are trying to convince them that objection is unnecessary. Where storytelling can come in is it changes the dialogue, right? Storytelling is a different way of helping the customer see the objection differently without taking on this motion of, I know more than you do and you should listen to me, which candidly almost never works for the seller in that circumstance. So think about when you get met with an objection, it's too expensive, it's not the right time, we need to start by doing X, Y, and Z, and then we'll bring you in. How can you tell a story about the cost of inaction that causes them to step back and say, let me think about this? It's not always going to elicit a, you've changed my mind, but we want to plant that seed of doubt. Storytelling is a great way of doing it and removes that offense, defense sort of motion. Number four, growing accounts. This is probably my biggest regret for the years that I spent with as an account manager is when it was time to upsell or cross-sell or we had a new product hit the bag, I made the mistake all the time of going out there and talking about the product and why the product would be helpful and what I knew about the customer and why that lined up with the product. But customers are wise, right? They know it's just a thinly veiled product pitch. What I wish in retrospect I would have been doing is taking my acumen of that client and the problems they were trying to solve and telling a story about a problem they were currently underappreciating that impacted the end result they were trying to get to, and leading to the product instead of leading with the product. So big miss on my part, but using storytelling to open the door to say, here's a problem that many companies don't typically appreciate, and here's a client that went through it and the result that they saw. It's a great way to measure how leaned in or leaned out is your customer to the problem what kinds of questions they're asking. And it's a much softer way and more customer-friendly way of, I think, introducing a potential new product. So last one, number five, is around demand creation. I am seeing so much conversation on LinkedIn right now about this. I think many of us are seeing dramatic drops in inbound lead volume. And so the natural tendency is to say, all right, let's turn up the outbound volume. That's absolutely what we need to do. But when we think about the channels we have available to us now, think about social, right? Social, let's say everybody's got a different space, right? Like I think I've mentioned this before, but like I worked with a company that sold garage doors and they have kind of condo associations as many of their clients. And so condo associations, where do they live? They live on Facebook, right? My clients, I sell to sales leaders, they tend to live on LinkedIn, and you may have a community. Figuring out where your customers go to learn is step one. But when we think about demand creation in those channels, it is very easy to fall into the trap of talking about our solution, what we do, and why it's great. And rather, a great opportunity to use storytelling is to say, how can I storytell on social to pull people into the problem such that it creates curiosity to maybe click the link to our website or maybe click the link to a, you know, ebook or something that we've created in order to help educate the customer on the problem. So when you are looking to outbound tactics, do not dismiss social. Do not dismiss the opportunity to storytell in a way that brings people into the problem. So five ways I use storytelling outside of the one that I had traditionally used it. So obviously, lots of things I did wrong. That's why I will always have fodder for this podcast and lots of things I've learned to do differently. One thing I like, everybody knows probably by this point, I'm a big fan of Josh Braun, and there's a saying that he has. It's called I do over IQ. And what that means is I can sit here and read books and listen to podcasts and do all these things, but if I never change my behavior, what is the point? And so what I'd like to present as an I do over IQ opportunity for anyone listening is to take a stuck opportunity in your pipeline. We've all got them. I know I do. And go back to, what is the cost of inaction? What have I framed as the pain of same? If you haven't done it, it's okay. It's a thing we have to be mindful and intentional about. Create it. But then instead of stopping there, instead of saying, here's what we're, you know, at risk of losing every day we don't do anything about this problem, in addition to that, build out a problem story using the frameworks that we talked about in the call today. Go back to the webinar if you want to see them. We obviously have visuals in the webinar. And then build out that problem story. How are you going to evoke a human emotion around the cost of inaction? And then before you ever share it with your customer, go tell it to your brother, your sister, your parents, your friend, your partner, your dog. Muggsy listens to me all the time. And say it out loud so that you get comfortable telling the story and figuring out, am I actually hitting on really strong imagery? Am I making the customer really, or the character relatable? Do I have a solid hook? And then when you feel really good about it, go out and tell your story. Learn what reactions, objections, disagreements, things did that customer present back to you. Refine it. And then don't stop there. Go identify other prospects and customers that you're talking to who have a similar circumstance where you can reuse the story. Because where this gets really, really hard is if you are trying to come up with a new story for every single person in your pipeline. If you've got the time and capacity to do it, more power to you. But I'm a big believer in scale. And situationally, a lot of times our customers are in similar circumstances where we can just make slight nuanced tailors to the story instead of starting with an uphill lift. Last thing I would ask of you, if you are working on a team, share your stories, especially problem stories. One of the things we started doing is creating a bank of problem stories. And anytime an AE, an AM comes up with a new idea of a problem story to tell that resonates, we share that back with the team. This is exceptionally helpful if you have newer people. Newer AEs will probably be equipped with the solution stories. Most of us have case studies and impact studies and things like that that we can share. Where they will struggle a bit is in the problem storytelling until they get more reps with the customers. So help your peers, create this bank. I guarantee you will learn at least a story or two from your peers that will help you. So lots of lessons learned. Hopefully you've taken away at least one thing from today. For most of our episodes on Winning the Challenger Sale, I will have a guest, but this was one I couldn't resist because it's an area where I've been learning, making some mistakes, and figuring out new ways forward. So hopefully today was helpful, and we will listen and hear your responses, your feedback. We love it. And see you next week.
Thanks, as always, for joining us here on Winning the Challenger Sale. For the tools and resources you need to close more deals, head over to challengerinc.com.